Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 79 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about a manifesto we have created for organizations in the business of lifelong learning. Before we do that, though, we want to take a moment to thank CASEL, our sponsor for the second quarter of 2017. CASEL is an accomplished full-services certification and licensure company that also offers its clients a variety of learning solutions capabilities. With an expert team of testing and instructional design professionals and a 30-year history of excellence in its field, CASEL understands what it takes to develop and deliver quality learning and certification programs. To find out more about CASEL's custom learning solutions, just go to leadinglearning.com/CASEL.
We also want to note that recordings from our recent Learning Technology Design, or LTD for short, virtual conference are available. We created that event specifically for professionals in the business of continuing education and professional development, and you can get access to all the great content delivered at the live online event by going to ltd.leadinglearning.com. And we also want to note, too, that these resources aren't going to be available forever. In fact, they will cease to be available after May 15th. So act now to make sure that you can get access to the great content.
Now, one resource that we are going to make available for, well, hopefully forever, and that we want to highlight as the resource for this episode is our Learning Business Maturity Model. And we've discussed this before in an earlier podcast, and we'll link to that, but we've not actually highlighted it as a resource, and it's closely related to the manifesto that we want to discuss in this episode. The model addresses stages of maturity for organizations in the business of lifelong learning, 4 stages of maturity, and then 5 knowledge and skill domains across those stages. And you can find a full explanation and a visual of it at tagoras.com/maturity. And you can also sign up to get access to the free assessment that accompanies the model by going to tagoras.com/maturity.
So let's get to the Learning Business Manifesto now. And this is a manifesto aimed at learning and education businesses. So we think we should first revisit what we mean by learning and education business, which we often just shorten to learning business. We've offered our definition before, but I think it bears repeating. One of the main things is to make sure that you don't confuse this term, learning business, with the term learning organization, meaning an organization that pays attention to what works and what doesn't, that it adapts and grows, et cetera. And in that sense, certainly every business should seek to be a learning organization, but that's not what we're getting at with the term learning business. Learning business, as we define it, has to meet 2 criteria.
And the first of those is that a fundamental reason for its existence is to generate revenue through selling learning and education experiences to a target audience. And in most cases, this means net positive revenue or profit.
And secondly, it has to self-identify as a business, meaning the majority of the people working in the business recognize that revenue generation is a fundamental reason for the business's existence.
And so in thinking about what a learning business is, it can be helpful also to be clear about what we feel a learning business is not. So most corporate training does not fall in the learning business category. So, you know, while corporate training can and should contribute to business success, it's typically a cost center and its audience is primarily internal to the company. And we'll leave aside for the moment the concept of extended enterprise, which is kind of trendy in the corporate world right now.
We'll also note that we do not think of traditional academic institutions, for the most part, as being learning businesses. Many public institutions are heavily subsidized, and even institutions that have to generate at least break-even revenue, whether they're public or private, you know, it's still pretty rare for this requirement to be emphasized or arguably even recognized out of a small segment of the administration. So, you know, we think that those traditional academic institutions are shaky at best on our first criterion, and that they rarely meet that second criterion of seeing themselves as a business.
But of course, there are exceptions, which can lead us to the types of organizations that we do feel qualify as learning businesses. So in the academic world, for example, the continuing education and extension programs that that many universities and colleges have will fall into the camp of learning businesses. These parts of colleges and universities, they're often run more like private training and education companies, which are another type of organization we would definitely classify as learning businesses.
And lastly, and arguably most importantly in the context of the podcast, you know, we'd say that most trade and professional associations are learning businesses, or at the very least, they run learning businesses within their overall business. And we feel that's true whether an organization is selling education and training directly, or whether it provides that access to learning as part of a member benefit. So, you know, I think in either case, you know, you have learning driving revenue. And so it's often treated as a business, should be treated as a business. So hopefully that offers a reasonable idea of what we mean by learning business. So with that definition behind us, let's get to the manifesto itself.
Right. So hopefully we've provided some context in which this manifesto will make sense. And what this is intended as is just a succinct way to state some of the key ideas and principles that we think should drive a successful learning business. And we want to share this because it underpins our thinking, certainly. And it's also influenced the development of the learning business maturity model, which we refer to as a resource for this episode. And again, we're going to link to our episode about that. We actually talked about it pretty extensively in episode 56. But the manifesto is really integral to the overall maturity model. And so to start off with, the learning business manifesto states that lifelong learning is the imperative of our age, and those who lead learning in their fields will lead their fields. And I'm going to repeat that because that's the core idea. That's the guiding thought behind the manifesto. So again, lifelong learning is the imperative of our age, and those who lead learning in their fields will lead their fields. So in other words, learning is at the very heart of the value that your organization offers, and we're assuming that most of the people who are listening here are coming from what we would consider to be learning businesses. So, you know, in today's world where, you know, change is happening more rapidly than ever, where people are changing jobs more frequently than before, and where people are living longer, learning simply is not a nice to have or something that you can check off your list as completed when you leave high school or college or even grad school. Lifelong learning is imperative as something that is lifelong.
So that's the baseline manifesto, that lifelong learning is the imperative of our age, and those who lead learning in their fields will lead their fields. But we have five supporting principles that go along with that baseline manifesto, and so we also want to talk about those. So the first one is, learners don't value expertise. What people are paying for and what they value is the application of what they learn. They really aren't interested in features and inputs, despite what a lot of marketing copy conveys. And so we think that savvy learning businesses get this, and they don't try to focus on specific fixed subject matter expertise that they can bring to bear. Rather, they focus on offering highly relevant and practical learning opportunities that learners can apply to their work and their lives. So, you know, we phrase this a little bit provocatively, learners don't value expertise. They certainly will say that they do if asked, but really what they're looking for is that application to their work, to their lives.
And I think when we talked about this, it was the idea that, you know, certainly, you know, you need the experts, you need to highlight that you've got the experts who are offering your content, and that does attract people from a marketing standpoint. So expertise will make the sale, but expertise will not make them stay. You know, what they're going to stay for, as you're saying, Salisa, is the outcomes. So really, that's what it comes down to, is valuing those outcomes and focusing your learning business on actually creating outcomes, not just hanging your hat on the resumes of the people that you can put in front of your learners. So that was the first point in the manifesto, or the first principle underlying the manifesto. Learners don't value expertise. And the second one, which is maybe not quite as provocative, but is slightly cryptic, and that is, if you can't see it, they can't see it. And the "it" here could be replaced by vision or value or impact. You have to have and articulate a vision for the impact of your education, for the value of what you offer, for the measurable impact of what you're doing. Because if you don't articulate that vision or value or impact, you can't assume that learners will see it. And this really goes to the emotional heart of learning in many ways. I mean, most people who are engaged in learning are doing it because they want some form of change. It may be fairly prosaic. They just want, you know, a better skill in something. Or, you know, it may be much higher level. They may want to change the world. But, you know, oftentimes organizations who are in a position to change an entire field, change an entire industry, to really change the world, that doesn't come across at all in how they actually articulate what they're trying to do with their learning. And as a result, they really don't hook their learners at an emotional level. So if you can't see it, they can't see it. You have to work on seeing it and then articulating it in a way that your learners are going to be able to see it.
Yeah, I can get so easy to focus on the details, to get in the weeds, to see the trees and really focus on those products and those events and putting all that out and sort of forget about the forest, the bigger context.
Right. There's a reason you're doing all this.
And so that was the second of our guiding principles, that if you can't see it, they can't see it. The third one is, good design is the enemy of impact. So I would say that this idea relates to a notion that you've probably heard before, that perfection prevents progress. And so I think it's all too easy for a learning business to get caught up in the trappings of learning, you know, so looking at learning objectives and making sure that they're perfectly phrased, or being, you know, really strictly committed to, you know, an interaction every 2 minutes in e-learning. But often what's really needed to result in impactful learning is something much less sexy. What's essential is setting the context, you know, why this is important to learn. And that doesn't have to happen through bullet points with action verbs. What's essential is that the learners engage with the content and begin applying it. And that may happen as readily by offering just a simple verbal reflection question as by building, you know, out some slick interactions. And so good design can be at odds with innovation and iteration. You know, we've certainly talked before about the idea of the minimum viable product, or MVP, and that can be a great way to float a trial balloon and see if a new learning offering is going to have impact. But MVPs, by definition, aren't polished. They don't fit the classic good design definition, but they could have huge impact. So it is a sort of a cautionary guiding principle. You know, don't let yourself be too distracted by or overly committed to good design. You know, you really need to be focusing on impact.
And I think it's important to stress here that, you know, it's not that that we are enemies of design. You know, in fact, we've made the point before that a lot of organizations aren't using design enough in what they're doing. They're not employing instructional design and creating their learning activities. But then the opposite side of that, which I think is captured in this principle, is that, you know, you get a little bit of design and you start to focus on the merely good. And it's just that it's something you can kind of fall back on and say, well, we designed it well, so it's fine. You know, we can move on. But, you know, you're not necessarily thinking about the impact. And I think this ties back to the previous point, too, about vision. I mean, all of it fits together. You're trying to achieve a bigger purpose. And oftentimes, you know, just being able to check the instructional design box, very often just being able to check the instructional design box is not getting you where you want to go in terms of actual impact.
Right. I think it's remembering that you need to have the commitment to the spirit of the law rather than the letter of the law.
Very, very well said. I don't mean to diss any instructional designers, but we often find in working with instructional designers that they're more about the letter of the law than the spirit of the law. And this is about the spirit of the law. Get that impact, you know, whatever it takes. And that may not, you may have to be a little unorthodox at times to make that happen. So that was number three, that good design is the enemy of impact. Number four is marketing is education is marketing. Sounds a little bit like Gertrude Stein there, I think, back from my graduate school days. But marketing is education is marketing. So we have a couple of points in mind here. You know, first is the rise of content marketing, which, you know, people have been beaten over the head with, I think, for the last several years if you've been paying attention to marketing trends at all. But, you know, at the core of content marketing is a focus on marketing that delivers educational value. That's what a lot of content marketing about. And, you know, a lot of marketing now, because of this, really most of the best marketing is educationally oriented at this point. So, you know, things like this podcast are an example. We're walking the walk here. So are the free webinars that we and so many others offer. So, you know, the fact that marketing itself often is educational is often, very often, usually free education is part of this marketing is education as marketing point. The second part of it is that educational offerings themselves are very often their own best source of marketing. So, you know, each educational offering that's part of your portfolio right now represents one of the best opportunities there is for highlighting and promoting other educational offerings that are either in your portfolio now or that you plan to produce. Your easiest sale is always going to be to your current customers. That's kind of an old law of sales, and there's a reason it's an old law of sales. So current course and conference customers are going to be some of your most receptive buyers of education, but you have to be sure to market to them as they're engaging in the educational experiences they're having with you, because that's when they're really experiencing the value that you offer. So it's a natural time to point to other value that you offer. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, shoving it down their throats. We're not talking about selling from the stage, which I know a lot of organizations, really do not like to see at their events, and for good reason. It does mean, however, making sure that your learners are aware of other relevant offerings and how they fit in to the overall value story you're telling as an education business. So, you know, that can mean referring to them in meaningful ways and in relevant ways as you're in the process of one educational experience, you know, creating that tie to another educational experience, making it clear that it's there and the value that it provides. So, you know, you end up with basically a value loop in which marketing educates people and then education markets the people and so on. So, you know, as a successful learning business, you need to really think about and think through and execute strongly on creating that value loop. So again, marketing is education is marketing.
And so the fifth and final supporting principle that makes up the Learning Business Manifesto is this: learning is noun and verb. So learning is a thing. It's what we deliver to learners. But learning is also an action. You know, it's what learners have to do, and it's what they have to do not only once, but on an ongoing basis. And I'm guessing that, you know, you, like us, you've heard calls to move away from, you know, one-off events and from focusing on products. You know, we've been told that we need to embrace learning as a process. And it's true that learning is a process, but it's also true that one-time events and products are part of how we keep that process going. So the events and products alone aren't enough, but they are key to the process. So learning is made up of transactions, of time-specific exchanges, but it's also made up of relationships, these enduring, ongoing interactions. And so lifelong learning is the goal we're working towards, and it's also what we must engage in to reach that goal. So it's both noun and verb.
So that's number five, and let's go back over those five supporting principles quickly just to help cement them in listeners' minds. So number one, again, learners don't value expertise. Number two, if you can't see it, they can't see it. Number three, good design is the enemy of impact. Number four, marketing is education is marketing. And then number five, learning is noun and verb. And of course, we're not expecting you to commit these to memory as you're driving down the road or jogging down the street or washing your dishes or whatever you're doing right now. You will, of course, be able to get these easily by going to the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode79. But, you know, we wanted to repeat them again here so they're hopefully resonating in your mind a little bit. And again, you know, if some of these sound counterintuitive, that's very much on purpose. If they sound a little bit provocative, that's also on purpose. This is a manifesto, after all. Manifestos, I guess, are associated with revolution and with big change and that sort of thing. And certainly we hope to create some big change in the world of the business of lifelong learning. So as we're starting to exit, that wraps up our comments on the manifesto. And again, we encourage you to, you know, think about it and go find those points in the show notes. But as we're exiting today, we want to say thanks once again to our sponsor, Castle. Castle is a full-service certification and licensure testing company that also offers its clients a variety of learning solutions capabilities. And again, you can find out more about Castle's custom learning solutions by going to leadinglearning.com/castle. We also want to mention again that the recordings from Learning Technology Design, or LTD, our virtual conference specifically for professionals in the business of continuing education and professional development, are now available and will only be available for a little while longer. You can get the details and sign up for those by going to ltd.leadinglearning.com.
To get the show notes for this episode, go to leadinglearning.com/episode79. And while you're there, you will see various options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of the podcast, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe.
We'd also be grateful if you would take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. Very easy to do. We know you're probably not in a position to do it right now as you're listening, but all you got to remember is leadinglearning.com/iTunes, and that'll get you to the right place. And we really appreciate you taking just a minute to do a rating and a review. It helps us know that you're getting value out of the podcast. And also, you know, putting those ratings and reviews into iTunes means that when somebody goes searching for a podcast that's about the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development, they're going to be likely to find us.
And finally, we hope you will consider telling others about the podcast. You can do it the old-fashioned way by just mentioning it to somebody in person, or you can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share. Or if tweeting isn't your thing, you can spread the word via your preferred social network.
So thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.